Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
I grew up like most kids, worried I couldn't bench two plates, that I wouldn't fit in, that I wouldn't find love. Then I discovered partying, and suddenly all those worries went to the wayside. I didn't need love. I had keg stands. I discovered I was great at raging, and it revealed wonderful things about myself. I could relate to bros regardless of what kind of bro they were. I could be at a party and moon people and everyone would laugh, you know, be witty. Or I could play beer pong and compete with real integrity. In short, I fulfilled my potential.
The Nightcap with Ryan Gates on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to the Nightcap Hour 2 on WGR Sports Radio 550. Derek Kramer, Jody Biasi, we're the ones fulfilling potential in a different way, I guess. We're not the partier guy in that thing. Maybe Ryan isn't either. I don't know. Whatever. I don't care. It's a silly little open. I love it. It's always so funny to chuckle about that one. So anyway, Ryan Gates off for the rest of the week, and it's me, it's Joe, we're hanging out with you again tomorrow night as well, so who knows what we'll talk about then, no big deal. But you heard from, in the first hour, you heard from Nathan Peterman, you heard from AJ McCarron. Next segment, you will hear from Josh Allen, the third string quarterback. He took third team reps in OTAs while Peterman and McCarron were splitting the first team reps there. In OTAs this week. So, first week of OTAs is done. Not much that you can really read into it. However, the big news was that before speaking, when he did speak with the media, first thing he said, Sean McDermott had said, Zay Jones, knee surgery. Oh boy. At this point for me, I'm just wondering if poor Zay Jones can catch a break at this point. He had a rough rookie season where he was playing through a torn labrum in his shoulder. And, you know, he struggled with drops. He was very inconsistent. He had a nice game in primetime against the Jets on that Thursday night before that game went south on the Bills after his touchdown. And then he had the incident there in the hotel with his brother, pretty much essentially saving his life, you know, when he had, you know, a bizarre incident there. And now this, a knee surgery. The poor kid has a rough start to his career. And I got a feel for him. It's not easy with the pressures of being an NFL draft pick, let alone a second-round draft pick. And now you have to go ahead and deal with another surgery. You don't get to go to these OTAs. You don't get to develop the timing with these new quarterbacks. In preseason, Peterman and Jones had a pretty good rapport. And it was looking real promising for Zay Jones. And then, again, like I said, the rough start to his season. He dropped a potential game-winning touchdown week two against Carolina. That could have also been a better thrown ball. But at the end of the day, it does hit his hands, and that's the guilt that he has to end up dealing with. So, but again, a rough start to the career of Zay Jones. And then Bills fans, meanwhile, as if this were to help any sort of case, poor Zay Jones, he looks at fellow second-rounder Juju Smith-Schuster lighting it up in his rookie season as a third receiver for Pittsburgh. So, I feel bad for Zay Jones. I think that the guy needs a break, and it's not happening for him right now. And I hope, obviously, that he comes back better and ready to go for training camp.
Yeah, it puts their wide receiver core in a tough spot. I hated the way that they had built the receiving core to begin with. There's not a lot of speed there. There's not a lot of depth. Yeah, there's not a lot of high-end talent even. So
I just went on the Zay Jones angle for the guy personally, now let alone the Bills depth chart. Yeah.
Looking at it on the football field side. They just, him not in there, he already, you're right, he had a really tough season last year. And, you know, I could argue that's a break. The fact that he was even able to get that opportunity and get on the field as a second-round rookie, because the Bills really didn't have any other options at wide receiver. Once Jordan Matthews goes out, I mean, Zay Jones pretty much has to play.
They drafted him for his talent.
Yeah, so I don't know. He did not look good in his first year. He had problems with drops. I wasn't super high on him coming into this year, but, you know, there was at least the hope with him. Because we know what we're getting out of Calvin Benjamin. We know what we're getting out of Andre Holmes. All these guys are veterans. Even Rod Streeters and Jeremy Curley. Like, these are guys that have been around the league. We pretty much know what you're getting out of them. The only way your receiving core could actually be pretty good is if Zay Jones takes another step forward. Mm-hmm. And if he's not on the field, which McDermott says today, no timetable, and that he didn't think his season was in jeopardy. So I could take some hope out of that. But really, for their receiving core to be good, if they don't make another move, you need Zay Jones to take another step.
You need
really
Zay Jones there, available, and you do need him to take a step in development. Yes, I agree. And that's the only way that this receiving core is going to get better because, I mean, let's be real, one of the more popular names being said by Bills fans is the likes of Dez Bryant. Two things. One, I don't think Dez wants to sign here. Two, and bigger, number two, Bryant doesn't scream process to me at all. I don't think, like, there's probably a mutual I'm not signing here, okay, great, you're not signing here because we don't want you kind of thing with the Bills and Dez Bryant because, again, Dez Bryant doesn't really scream process to me, and Bryant himself looks like he kind of wants to try to go to a different team, particularly one that's facing the Cowboys because he's spiteful.
The thing is, though, with that, I made this point before on McDermott, and if he's going to be considered like a truly great coach in the NFL, and I'm skeptical on that, I mean, they made the playoffs year one, and that's better than anyone before him had done, but they did get a little lucky. That's why I'm still a little skeptical to automatically say, okay, we've got our coach, like we're good. If he wants to be considered in that top tier of head coaches in the NFL, at some point, you can't just bring in the guys that are great characters and they're just going to fit right in. Like, that's easy. At some point, you got to do what like Bill Belichick has tried to do. Try to conform a guy who's got a lot of talent into your system. Make it work. And like that happened with Belichick, the whole do your job thing in New England. No one would have ever said that Albert Haynesworth would have fit that. No one would ever said that Randy Moss would have fit that. And sure, not every time they did that, it worked. It didn't. Like Albert Haynesworth, for instance, who I mentioned as an example.
Haynesworth was a flop.
Yeah, it fell right on their face. But Randy Moss, they would have brought them in, him. That would have brought Randy Moss in. And New England fans are probably saying, now, this guy is not a Belichick guy. This isn't do your job. But what happened? They made it work. They took the talent in and they brought him into that system. If you have a good supporting staff, you can afford to bring in a guy like that. It's not Rex Ryan where he's running a loose ship and you bring in a guy with character issues and he's basically able to run wild. No, you've set up a team here where your locker room should be able to handle that. So at some point, I'd like them to take a risk like that where you bring in a guy that has...
soon.
Yeah, I do. Well, maybe. You bring in a guy that has a really good talent, but maybe he's a little questionable on the character side of things. Now, Dez, for instance, maybe this isn't the time to do it because I think we agree on this. We don't think he's a super, like, he's not a super talent at this point. He's a good wide receiver still in the NFL. Even last year was a down year for him. What do you have, 800 yards and a couple touchdowns? Like, that's not nearly what you think you'd be getting out of Dez Bryant, but from Bill's standards, 800 yards and 3-4 touchdowns, like, that's maybe your number one wide receiver going into this season. Like, that's pretty good. So, no, I think he's a little bit overrated as a player. I don't think he's nearly the player that he used to be. But if he's looking for a one-year contract, why not try it on for size? You've got a big hole at wide receiver. You've got a lot of unproven quarterbacks here that could use some help, especially if Josh Allen's going to end up playing this year. I don't really necessarily feel comfortable with him going out there with this wide receiving core. Because if he wants to throw the ball deep, he does not have a guy to do that for him. He doesn't have a guy to run downfield and
but is Dez Bryant? Dez Bryant's not that guy either.
No, but he's better at it, I think, than these other guys.
I just don't see it.
While he is overrated, I don't think he's a great receiver at this point. I think he automatically becomes your number two wide receiver.
I mean, yeah, but I think that what you're looking for, what the Bills need in a wide receiver at this point is...
Don't they need everything at wide receiver? They need a speed guy. They need a reliable slot guy. They need a guy that can just play in the outside so that Andre Holmes isn't on the field. That's what they need, I think. I think
honestly,
they just need a guy that can give them some depth at the position.
Here, hang on. I'm sensing Ryan is channeling through me right now because I'm going to say a name and it's going to kind of make some sense here. Rod Streeter. I'm on Team Rod. And I think Streeter had himself a great preseason and was going to make this team straight up if he didn't get himself hurt. I think that he gives you a little bit of that speed advantage that you need. And if Zay Jones can't start the year in the slot, Streeter can.
But that's
but obviously part of the art. But the outside thing, yes, that's still a legitimate concern. You need another guy on the outside, and well, you're not getting it there.
I hear you with Streeter. My point would be that, because remember, I also said Dez Bryant isn't just coming in to be like, he's not going to fix the whole problem, but he's going to take a little less pressure off these other guys to come in and be automatic difference makers. Because last year, Rod Streeter gets hurt, and you were nowhere with a deep threat, and they had to go out in the street and find Deontay Thompson, and that worked. But are you confident you're going to be able to do that again? Say Rod Streeter gets hurt again. What are you looking at as your deep threat? They don't really have one. And it's not like Rod Streeter is some world beater. He had one really good season, and other than that, I mean, he's got half of his career numbers in 1 year.
Strangely enough, Jeremy Curley is a guy that you can look at, though, in a little bit of a speed element as well.
These are journeymen, though.
He's not really a journeyman.
Curley? He's been around.
He's been 49ers, around.
Niners, Jets, Lions.
When was he with the Lions?
He was with the Lions.
Hmm.
I remember because I had him in fantasy when he was with the Lions.
It's awfully forgettable. You know what? I bring up the name. I might as well click on it, right?
Well, maybe he wasn't with the Lions. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
No,
is
he
that
was,
possible?
He was with Detroit, actually, for 1 year.
Who else could I possibly be thinking of when I'm thinking of Jeremy Curley? Rod Streeter. No. Maybe he wasn't with the Lions. Well, he was definitely with the 49ers.
Five years with the Jets, then bounced to the Lions, 49ers, and then back to the Jets.
Pro Football Reference doesn't ever have him playing for the Lions, though. So that's interesting.
It was off season. He was traded from, before the season started, he was traded from Detroit to San Fran. He signed with Detroit in 2016. He signed with Detroit. But then he was traded to San Francisco in August.
Okay, I see.
Of that year in 2016. So it's not really like he's been a journeyman necessarily. He served 1 year with San Fran after his 1 year deal was done and then went back to New York.
So I'm just pulling up some of their stats here. So Jeremy Curley and Rod Streeter, they're kind of similar in that they have only really had one really good season. And really good season, I'm talking like 800 yards.
Yeah.
Like in the 800-yard range and a couple touchdowns. I'm trying to pull up Dez Bryant here, but my computer is going anciently slow. If I remember off the top of my head, down season for him last year was about 800 yards and a couple touchdowns. So that would be kind of more of my point. I'm not saying Dez has to come in here, and he doesn't really have to play all the time.
I wouldn't.
But if his down season are these other guys' great season, then, you know, if I'm only bringing him in on a one-year deal, I don't have to commit that much to him. And I could probably get him really cheap because, really, where's he going right now? He's trying, I think, to get a contract out of Green Bay, but it doesn't seem like they're biting. Where else does he go? He's already turned down Baltimore. The Adam Schefter reports there's more teams that wouldn't want to give him even the minimum than there are teams that want to sign him at all. So there could be a scenario where Dez is sitting there thinking, man, I don't want to do it, but I don't know where else I'm playing. I don't know where else I'm going to get time on the field, where else I'm going to be able to get an opportunity to even maybe put up these numbers than Buffalo. So if it happens, and I'm not predicting that happen, I wouldn't even say it's likely. But if that does happen, I think the Bills should absolutely go in on it. Because I think their biggest hole right now in their roster is their depth and their talent at wide receiver.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, I'm dismissing Dez Bryant more or less because of the first part, what we were talking about with. Yes, Sean McDermott does need to take those chances, but I don't think it's going to happen at this time in his career in his second season.
So when does he do it? Next year?
I would say if he gets a little bit of a track record, and more importantly, if Josh Allen is established as the quarterback.
Dez Bryant, by the way, 69 catches last year, nice. 838 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Like, talking about these other receivers, if I told you you were going to get 838 yards and 6 touchdowns out of either Rod Streeter, Jeremy Curley, maybe if I threw Zay Jones there, you would take it.
Yeah.
Immediately. And that's a down year for him.
It's a down year for him, but I also think that the other reason is that he is kind of a headache. And the last thing I think Sean McDermott wants in his second season, grooming a rookie quarterback with an unsettled quarterback situation.
No, that's a good point.
Is a headache.
No, that's a good point.
That's my thing.
If Allen was more established, then you're right.
Yes.
Maybe it would be a better idea to do it. I still would probably lean towards it, but you move me a little closer to the middle there because that's right. If Dez is the headache that some people think he is, some people don't think he is. Some people think it's just media narrative. But if he is that, then I, you're right. I don't want him near my rookie quarterback. If my rookie quarterback's playing, we also have to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Could be McCarron. I'd hope McCarron could deal with it.
Right now, it's a three-headed race at quarterback. Nathan Peterman still factors into this. You got to remember that. And the thing is that once Dak Prescott went under the center for the Dallas Cowboys, Dez Bryant has not been the same player.
No, good point. Romo. Since he hasn't had Romo, he has not been an elite wide receiver.
Exactly. It's funny what an elite quarterback can do for you.
He is ranked right now as the top free agent wide receiver.
Yeah, I said it. Romo's elite.
And I think Eric Decker is next,
mm-hmm.
who has not signed. Jeremy Maclin has not signed.
Maclin still hasn't signed.
Rather does.
Well, yeah. I'm just a little shocked. The name is still out there. But that's sometimes just what happens.
Brandon Tate.
Oh, boy.
He's versatile. That's what they love.
You know
what? They love those versatile guys.
You know what? I think this is a time for a break.
Actually, before we go to break, I just want to address one thing. We had a couple questions, one on Twitter and one, actually, someone called in with this, asking about the lottery protection for the Evander Kane pick, because the Sabres get that 2019 pick now because Kane signed in San Jose. So when they say lottery protected, as I've come to understand it, and this hasn't been confirmed, like I haven't seen this officially
yes.
from the team.
This is as we understand it, yes.
What I've read from the guys who know what they're talking about, if the Sharks miss the playoffs, that means they retain the pick.
Just miss it entirely.
Yes.
And
it's not like
whether
the
they win the lottery yep. or not.
No, it wouldn't
the
matter.
The lottery protection means that if they miss the playoffs, you kick that pick to 2020.
Right, and then they would get it regardless. It's not like, oh, you only don't get it if the Sharks win one of those top three picks. No, the way it seems is if the Sharks miss the playoffs next season, then the Sabres do not get that pick.
You know what? That's
but
a little dicier than I would.
That is, I think, very unlikely, I'll be honest, because the Sharks easily made the playoffs this season, and I'm not predicting it'll happen, but I think they are going to be a serious contender to land John Tavares. And if they end up with that,
ooh, yeah.
and landing that whale, then there is a 0% chance they're missing the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
They're a really good team.
Yeah. I'd be.
Kane makes them better.
Obviously, I would dance in the streets if the Sabres can get him. But if he settles on San Jose, then well, I'll be happy, you know, because then that means hey, like you said, they're not missing the playoffs.
No, that team would be loaded.
Edmonton would worry me. Calgary would worry me. Calgary in particular would worry me if they can get themselves a goaltender.
Wait, for who? Who are we talking here?
For in danger for the Sharks to miss the playoffs.
Oh, I see. For teams yeah. that could knock them out of that spot.
Yeah. I mean,
Anaheim's. I'm not confident Edmonton's going to figure yeah. it out though. Calgary is a good one.
Calgary is one that actually scares me more.
If Mike Smith doesn't get hurt there towards the end of the year, they
might end up
make
in
the playoffs
instead of L.A., I'd think.
That's the thing, though. I'm not sure L.A. is good enough to jump San Jose because yeah. I think they did pretty much as good as they could do last year, and I don't see a lot of young talent coming in there making them better.
I think San Jose is the same way. They don't have that young talent coming up, do they?
But when you talk about like dynamic scoring, like L.A., watching them in the first round could not get chances. If Drew Doughty or Anze Kopitar weren't getting them chances, nobody was doing it. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Whereas the Sharks, like, they've got offensive talent everywhere. They got Couture, they got Pavelski, Brent Burns on the back end. Thomas Hurdle's developed into a nice young player. Timo Meier's a first-round pick.
And now Evander
Kane. Really good. Evander Kane. Joe Thornton might come back on a little deal. I don't think he's getting like a 1-year deal. He said he would come back to that. He's still almost a point a game player.
He might be
your third line center.
He said he might even come back on the vet minimum.
Yeah, I think the Sharks are different from the Kings in that way, where I think you make a point where sure they're both like their cores are a little bit older, but I just think there's more dynamic talent on the Sharks. It would be I would be flabbergasted if they ended up missing the playoffs because that's not a great division. So I think the Sabres are getting that 2019 first. So it'll be probably 15 or later.
All right. Well, there's your clarification. The Sharks missed the playoffs. It's a 2020 first rounder. But for now, it is the 2019 first round pick. Thanks to the San Jose Sharks getting a 7-year deal agreed to with Evander Kane. And for all the talk that the Sabres got fleeced in that deal, hey, at the end of the day, they got their first round pick. Who am I to complain? I'm not going to. I think it's cool. They got their first round pick. Let's do it. I mean, again, it could be 2020, but they still are guaranteed a first rounder. Let's go.
Danny O'Regan, too. Just kidding. He's probably going to be an AHL guy. They also got another pick, fourth round pick this year, but the Sharks can switch that to a third next year if they want.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure they'll just give a fourth rounder up instead.
None of this matters because we've got Rasmus Dahlin.
Yes, we do.
And now everything that happens is going to be great. Because
everything else is a bonus.
Yep. Right. Take, found money.
Take your bonus, like this first round pick. All right. You heard from Nathan Peterman. You've heard from AJ McCarron. Now you will hear next from the rookie, Josh Allen, from Bills OTAs. Derek Kramer, Jody Biasi, we're hanging out with you on the Nightcap. You're listening to WGR.
I'm assuming at that time I was still with Buffalo Bills, so that really doesn't affect me. Things happen in this league that you can't affect, that you can't change. I've always been one to focus on the things that I can change, and that's my attitude daily, the effort that I bring, and the energy that I bring around my teammates. So that's been my focus. Like I said, I really can't speak on or let that affect me.
That was kind of Tyrod Taylor. I was distracted by some guy deciding to speak while Tyrod Taylor was speaking. But Tyrod there was talking about the fact that the Browns reportedly had tried to trade for Nick Foles before settling on Tyrod Taylor after the Eagles declined pick number 35 overall to trade their backup quarterback. So, but I was so distracted by whoever the hell that other guy was.
It was Baker Mayfield.
Was it?
I don't know.
I mean, I mean...
He's trying to get in Tyrod's head. He's got a quarterback battle to go through here. Coming up on Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks, yes, that's right. Hard Knocks is going to have Baker and Tyrod.
He was actually Mayfield in the background yelling, Foles is better.
All right, so, like we've said, you've heard from the other two quarterbacks. Here's Josh Allen after OTAs wrapping up this week.
Everybody's going through the same thing right now. You know, all quarterbacks are still trying to figure out entirely what's going on with everybody. That's the tough part about being quarterback. You're supposed to know what everybody's doing on the field. You know, AJ and Nate have done a really good job. They know what they're doing out there, and they've, you know, given me a lot of knowledge, and they've helped me along the way. Obviously, we're only 3 days in, so we got a lot more install. You know, we got a lot more to do before we can say we're ready.
Jordan, I know Jordan Palmer work with you like on studying a system for learning? Is that helpful? Been helpful to you, or are you
absolutely and it's not that we learned a system before. It was learning how to learn a system. So it was, you know, techniques we can use to learn formations, things we can tell ourselves when we hear a concept and go out there and try to remember it, just kind of sequencing. And Jordan did a good job with me and, you know, Sam with that.
Josh, have you ever been third on the depth chart as a quarterback on a team?
Yeah, absolutely. My junior college year, I was actually maybe third or maybe even fourth my first three or four games.
What's the challenge then in being that far on the depth chart while trying to learn and compete and all of that?
Well, the challenge with it is getting a limited amount of reps. You know, especially yesterday, it was split up where the ones and twos got more than the threes. But at the same time, it's me standing back there and trying to take mental reps, learning from what AJ and Nate are doing, you know, staying engaged the entire time.
So I kind of flipped. You got a bit more today, right?
No, we all got the same today. Yeah.
So that said, if you're not getting as many reps, is there sometimes a tendency to say not try to do too much to show, you know, hey, I want more reps. I want to show that I belong here, and you kind of have to not be too aggressive maybe at times?
I mean, that's a really good question, and some people handle it differently. I'm going out there. I'm trying to do everything right. I'm not trying to do too much, and, you know, whatever Coach Dable and Coach Coley are preaching to me is what I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do. I'm going to trust my teammates, put the ball where it needs to be, let them go make some plays, and it's as simple as that.
Coach Dable seems to be pretty hands-on. Can you just comment about what it's been like with Dable so far?
It's been awesome. You know, he's very energetic. He's very engaged, you know, with myself, Nate, and AJ. You know, meetings are awesome. He's super talkative. He's got a lot of information. You know, I definitely am in a really good situation here, being able to learn from AJ and Nate. And then, you know, a coach like Dable.
And there was also one play out on the field. You threw a touchdown pass to Ray Ray. You got really hyped afterwards. Can you just comment on that?
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, there's nothing better than throwing touchdowns. So even in practice, it gets the juices flowing a little bit. So I just wanted to go out there and let him know he ran a really good route, and he did what he's supposed to do. And seems as when everybody does their own job, things tend to work out for the better.
Josh, you said at rookie minicamp, you're going to kind of feel your way out once the veterans got here. It's been a few weeks, you know, that you've all been acclimated. Where are you in that process of feeling your way out on this team and being outspoken or whatever as a rookie?
You know, it's been great. You know, the guys that are here, the locker room that we have, the culture that, you know, Coach McDermott has established here, it's very family-like. So getting in and establishing relationships with the vets, you know, guys like Lorenzo Alexander and LeSean McCoy and Calvin Benjamin, you know, and I got Eddie Yarbrough who played at Wyoming with me, and there's tons of other guys, but, you know, those are the guys that have been more notable in the past. But, you know, it's been good to get in with these guys and kind of share stories and just kind of see where each other comes from. And, you know, it's been a fun process. There's a lot of names involved with it. You know, it's getting better each day, just remembering faces and along with the names. But, man, this is a fantastic locker room that we got here.
How eye-opening is it, or maybe not, to see the DBs at this level compared to college and how tight they are, how tight the windows are that you have to fit things in, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the game just moves a little bit faster. You know, it's not that these guys run so much faster, they're so much bigger than the guys in college. It's that they're smarter. You know, they know where they need to be. They get the route recognition a lot faster, a lot quicker. They're jumping on balls now. You know, and we got guys that are fantastic players, Micah Hyde and Poyer, and then you got, you know, a vet like Vontae Davis out there, and he's pushing our receivers to be better and, you know, making sure that our as quarterbacks, we put the ball where it needs to be.
How much will that help your growth and maybe even quicken the curve working against Trey White, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, as you just mentioned? I would think going against that group only makes you better quicker.
Absolutely. You know, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another, and that's kind of the mindset that, you know, when you practice, you should have. You should be able to look across to the guy next to you and the guy that you're competing with and say, I'm going to make you better, you're going to make me better, and go at it like that.
Yeah, you 3 days how the reps were doled out, how much of that was kind of pre-planned? And, you know, when they sat you down and said, this is how we want to develop you, did you kind of know going in that you would start at the bottom and work your way up?
You know, I didn't know that. You know, I expected it. You know, I'm not even looking at it that way. I'm looking to get better every day. You know, whatever reps I'm getting with whoever I'm out there with, I'm here to learn, you know, from obviously from Nate and AJ and then from Coach Dable and through experiences on the practice field. You know, balls that I can throw at the professional level and balls that I can't. And being out there, like you said, with the guys that we have out there, it's definitely a quicker learning curve just because of the guys we've got are extremely good. So the process has been fun, and all you got to do is trust it.
Is there more pressure because you want to work your way up faster, or less pressure because you're starting at the bottom and there's only one place to go but up?
There's really no pressure. You know, there's nothing that's been said to me to, you know, make me feel uncomfortable or feel worried about anything at all. I'm here to get better. I'm here to, you know, be the best teammate, the best quarterback that I can be, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Josh, how comfortable are you feeling in the pocket right now on the field?
Feeling good. You know, the drills that we're doing with Coley and Dable are really good. They definitely apply to in-game and in-practice situations, just feeling pressure from one side and subtle movements and setting your feet now and putting the ball where it needs to be.
You've now spent a couple weeks in Buffalo itself, mm-hmm. Western New York. What jumps out at you?
Obviously the people. You know, the Bills Mafia is an energetic group. They're very passionate. You know, I've gone out to eat a few times, and you know, the welcoming by the people of the community has just been fantastic. You know, we got a lot of good people, a lot of good hardworking people up here that really love football, and that's the type of environment that I want to be in.
Any of those two meals, more, wings. Please.
Say it again.
Any of those meals, wings.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Having battled against adversity time and time again, we saw that in Tim's excellent series. What prevents or what continues to motivate you in the sense that here you are, a number 7 draft pick, and to some people it might say, hey, I've arrived. What continues to motivate you and prevent you from feeling that sense of comfort in knowing that somebody hasn't overlooked you as far as the Bills and the number 7 pick?
Yeah, you know, I'm a very self-motivated guy, to be honest. You know, I want to play this game for as long as I can and as long as my body will let me. So I'm going to do everything right, and that's what motivates me, is to play this game for 15 plus years and be known as one of the greats to play this game. You know, you talk about the vets in the league right now, like Drew Brees and Tom Brady, Big Ben, Philip Rivers. I mean, the list goes on, but to be talked about like one of them, you know, it takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of success. And in order to, you know, get success, it takes a long time to accumulate over the years. And that's what I want to do.
That was Josh Allen out at OTAs. And, you know, he seems very, as Sale had said, he seems very, you know, even keeled. He's got candid answers. He's got a smile on his face all the time. So he's enjoying himself, and that he is part of the process, you know, how he's answering questions. So, no, I think, you know, Josh Allen said some pretty good things there. And I think that he's taking the season as it goes. So Joe and I got into an interesting little discussion while that was playing, though. Perfect. I saw a commercial. I was watching TV in here for the new Star Wars movie, A Solo Story, and I'm excited for it. I'm probably going to go see it this weekend. And Joe and I, though, ended up on a little discussion and a little bit of a hot take from Joe.
Is it a hot take?
I mean, it might
Someone
be.
Tell me if it's
it
a hot
might
take.
Be. Okay.
All I said was I don't think Han Solo would be in my top 10 favorite Star Wars characters. Now,
ten's
I went through
a lot.
It. I went through it and
10
he actually,
is a lot.
He squeaked in.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 10's a lot. That would have been a hot take if he didn't end up in your top
but
10.
But it came out today, just a couple hours ago.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen this.
I did
Solo
not.
Solo comes out this week.
Yes.
Right, this week?
Yep.
Or next week, whatever. That another character is having a standalone film.
Please let it be Obi-Wan.
I wish. Obi-Wan's my number one.
Ah!
Boba Fett. Boba Fett is getting a standalone
film. Bye!
Whoever James Mangold is will be the director. Or no, the writer and director.
Well, look. Now, this might be a hot take to some people.
Han Solo made the top 10 for me. Barely, yes. But he did.
Boba, oh my god, get out of here with that. That's a discussion for another day.
I'll run through them real quick. You tell me where I'm wrong here. I've got Obi-Wan ahead of him.
Okay.
Yoda.
Okay.
Vader.
Okay.
Chewbacca.
Okay.
R2-D2.
Okay.
R2-D2.
He's got
a little comic.
He's got personality to him. I'll give him that.
Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
Leia.
Yep.
All right, you might have a problem with these next two.
Okay.
Darth Maul.
I don't have a problem.
He's
awesome. I think he was underused.
Especially as a kid.
Yes.
Like when I was a kid watching him, like you, that guy was awesome.
When you were a kid,
red
did
face,
you see
horns,
those movies first?
Double-sided lightsaber.
Because you're younger than me.
Yes,
so you saw those movies first, so he had a bigger impact on you. That's fair.
And Boba Fett. It was close with him and Solo, though. Very close. Who's cooler, though? Boba Fett.
Who's cooler?
That's the
I would say the guy who didn't go out like a little punk.
They kind of did go out with like a little punk. Nah, you're right, he did.
Yeah. Boba Fett went out by accident. By Han Solo, by the way, who was blind at the moment.
Even then, you only disagree really with one of them.
I
think we'd be close.
I could be justified on this. Solo makes my top three. He's actually number two. I've got Luke, Han, Leia, Obi-Wan, Yoda. Because original trilogy Yoda was a bad man. Oh, I see. Now that I'm giving my rankings, you're giving me the Imperial March. I see what hell
that
is.
What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do nothing.
Then Vader, and then I really like Rey from these new movies. I think she's awesome. Then Chewie, then Qui-Gon. That's right, Qui-Gon Jinn. Anytime,
I can respect that.
Anytime you got a Liam Neeson's for me, I'm cool with it.
I can respect Qui-Gon.
Yes.
He also invented the ghost thing.
Yes, he invented the ghost thing, apparently.
That was really just George Lucas trying to tie up loose ends and make sure he counted for everything in those
exactly
those prelogs.
Yeah, which was when he rushed everything together like a joke. And then number 10, strangely for me, I've got like a tie between Mace Windu, Darth Maul, and Finn.
Forgot about Mace Windu.
Hey man, Liam Neeson's and Samuel L. Jackson. I mean,
does Mace Windu? I don't think Mace Windu gets above Han Solo for me.
No, not even close.
I think I'm set there.
I got Han, but Han's my second favorite character in Star Wars. So I mean. Yes, welcome to your sports radio station with your Star Wars talk. Thank you very much. Boba Fett. Get out of here with this garbage. Get out of here with this garbage. I think that means I'm angry enough I need to take a break. Boba Fett. This is the Nightcap. Derek Kramer, Joe DiBiase, we're hanging out in place of Ryan. We're also here tomorrow night, 7 to 9. So, hang out with us as well. You're listening to WGR.
Well, the fifth game is really, really important in winning 2-0. So, I mean, that's as they do. You got to grab this one. But then again, it's not the end of the world. You know, we've shown we can win there. So the next game, we're thinking only about the next game.
Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni. And, hey, that game is on at 9 o'clock. You can hear that over on our sister station at ESPN 1520. Rockets, Warriors, that series tied at 2. Are Klay Thompson and Andre Iguodala playing? They were questionable.
I haven't seen anything yet on it.
So there you go.
If I had to guess, Iguodala doesn't play and Thompson does. Thompson came back in game 4 after the injury.
Yes.
Didn't look quite the same, but he did come back. Iguodala didn't play at all. Like, he was held out before the game started.
Yes. So
that would be my guess. Interesting little stat I saw by ESPN that if the Rockets win this game, the odds of us getting Warriors-Cavaliers 4 fourth year in a row for that would be down to 3%.
So the number of times it happens would be would be higher.
And Derek, I'll ask you
than this, the percentage of it happening.
I want to ask you this question because you're more of the casual basketball fan.
Yes.
Where I think I wouldn't call myself like a diehard NBA fan. But
you're
I
more
think
of a you're
somewhere
more,
in between diehard.
You're more
and casual.
Engaged than I am.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in between diehard and casual.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know your opinion on, because for me personally, if it ends up being Rockets Celtics in the finals, it's just not going to have that same buzz to me. It's not going to have, like, I won't be waking up in the morning going, oh, let's go, game 3 tonight, Rockets and Celtics. Like, if it's Warriors-Cavs again, even though I think it would probably be a blowout, like, that's a legit rivalry, and that's LeBron James, and that's
I
star
think for
power.
The...
Like, I wonder what your opinion would be, like, how much would it change for you and how excited you would be for the finals if it was Rockets-Celtics instead of Warriors-Cavs?
I don't think it would change anything for me. I'd still watch it. Because of the fact that, you know, it's the finals. It's the NBA finals. The two best teams are there at
so,
that point.
So Warriors-Cavs wouldn't give you, like, any bonus?
It wouldn't give me any bonus. Actually, it might be a deterrent based on the fact that LeBron James has to do everything himself. He had Kyrie Irving last year, and they still only won one game.
Yeah. And that one, it's funny about that one game. I think that was the only game the Warriors lost in the playoffs, and the Cavs set an NBA record with 83 points in the first half, and I think they still only won by like 10.
Yeah. No, that team doesn't have much of a chance. I think that for the sake of watchability and a longer series, the NBA needs the Cavs to be the Eastern Conference representative.
I do too. I actually think the best scenario for the NBA is Rockets Cavaliers. And I know the Warriors, like, the Warriors, no matter if they're in it, people are going to watch. But
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, in terms of competitiveness, I think it's a closer series if it's Cleveland and Houston. I still think Houston would probably win maybe in 6 games.
But more like, pull from LeBron James. The more that big pull, that star power from LeBron James would be there.
Sure.
Yes.
The star power's there, and his quest to get to that fourth championship would seem more likely than if it was the Warriors. Because I think the Warriors walk in against either one of these teams in the East, and, like, casual fans like you, like, maybe not you personally, but I think people in your position might look at it and go, do I need to watch? The Warriors are going to win by 30 tonight.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? They're just going to sweep them. If the Rockets are in there, there's some doubt.
Yeah.
That's why I think the best-case scenario for the NBA, you still got the star power with Harden, Paul.
The injuries to the Warriors, though, might help with that doubt.
Yeah.
If Houston gives them the 7-game series, then I might think that Houston's just as strong as Golden State.
Let's think about it. Like, those are really good players getting hurt for Golden State, and it's their 3rd and their 5th best player. Like, that's how amazing they are. They're
so stacked.
Their superstar player that got hurt, and then their really other really, really good starter. Like, it's their 3rd and 5th best player. And they're still a favorite tonight on the road.
Yeah.
Against the team that set records for offensive efficiency. Like, statistically, the best offensive team in the history of the sport is an underdog at home. That's how good the Warriors are. That's how loaded they are. So I think Rockets-Cavs. That's what I want to see, too.
Game 5, it's over on ESPN 1520, starting in about 7 minutes or so.
Pre-game already over there, if you want to.
Yes.
No, wait a couple minutes. We're still here.
By the way, yeah, you can wait a couple more minutes. By the way, text of the night came in while we were on the break after we had some Star Wars discussion. Liam Neeson went to negotiate trade routes and started an intergalactic war. You know what? He's not wrong. He's not wrong. That's actually a really good one.
He spelled Liam Neeson as wrong, I think, as you could possibly
do. Oh, yeah, of course he
did. While still knowing that the name being spelled is Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
He
still got off. He got a spelling of Neeson on this. It's like a super Swedish version of it.
Man, what was Liam Neeson doing in that movie? What made him think that was a good idea?
I don't know. Money?
This is Star Wars Cantina music, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
If you couldn't tell.
Look at that. We end the show with some Star Wars stuff for you. Oh, boy. Oh, well. I regret nothing.
Let's go Rockets.
Boba Fett. Get out of here with this. Thanks for listening, as always, here on WGR. You know how tomorrow goes. Wait, no. Tomorrow's different, y'all. Who's on 10 to 12? Do we know?
Sal will be on.
Sal will be on from 10 till 3?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Marathon shift there from Sal. So, Howard and Jeremy, 6 to 10, your usual thing. And then Sal, 10 to 3. There's no instigators, no One Bills Live, but Sal's going to be here. And then, Chopin Bulldog, 3 to 7. Then, Joe and I are back here for another nightcap, 7 to 9. You know how it goes here. Thanks for listening, as always. Derek Kramer and Joe DiBiase. We've been hanging out in for Ryan Gates. Thanks for listening to the Nightcap, WGR.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.